Good morning, or depending on when you're listening to this call. Good morning for me. I hope that everybody who comes on to listen to the recording finds what they want, says Hashem, and that it benefits our recovery. The purpose of the call is to talk about a topic that was raised in a discussion we had in a group that was not recorded, of course. This fella asked me, why do I hear that a lot of people in Sexaholics Anonymous or other 12-step fellowships like Narcotics Anonymous or Overeaters Anonymous or Debtors Anonymous or Gamblers Anonymous, why do I hear them say sometimes that they go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings occasionally, open Alcoholics Anonymous meetings? Open meeting means that it allows people from other fellowships to come, or really anybody to come, including a family member, theoretically, would be a fully open meeting, but usually there are open meetings in some fellowships. There are open meetings, and anybody can come. So anybody from any 12-step fellowship, rather, can come usually to open meetings. But he asked why would somebody want to? There are no SA open meetings, by the way, none, because of the nature of the addiction. We can't have that. But anyhow, so the guy asked why would somebody want to do that, and I said to him it has to do with Torah Shebaal Peh. And it has a lot to do with the Keda, ultimately, and discussed it with him, and decided to make a little recording of this. So let's see how it goes. The question that was asked is very good. If somebody has a problem with narcotics or with sex, pornography, lust, fantasy, etc., or gambling, let's say, or, you know, heroin, you know, why would that person benefit from going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting at all? What does Alcoholics Anonymous recovery have to do with Sexaholics Anonymous recovery, with the sex problem? So if a person's doing it, if a person's coming onto GYE, a lot of folks come onto GYE not because they're addicts. Most people on GYE are not addicts. Most people who come onto GYE come on and look it up because they're struggling with their Yetzirah, and addiction and the Yetzirah, as many people explain, are two very different things. They can overlap, but they don't have to. You know, cats, all cats are animals. Not all animals are cats, for example. So a lot of these folks come on because they're sinning and they want to do tshuva and they want to stop and learn how to control themselves. Alcoholics who are really alcoholics usually also come into Alcoholics Anonymous, into recovery, to try to learn how to control alcohol. That's why most of us, you know, most of us don't really want to stop completely. We theoretically want to stop. We say we want to stop completely. It's a sin. It's this. It's that. But just like the alcoholics, most of us come into recovery thinking, dreaming, subconsciously, usually, sometimes consciously, that we'll be able to drink like everybody else occasionally, like on Purim or at a chasana or for the Arba Kosos. You know, we think we'll be able to drink and enjoy, you know, and it tastes good and etc. But the difference will be that now we will control it. You know. Like, in other words, be normal, you know. In Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't advocate normalcy. They advocate abstinence, you know. The job of an alcoholic who joins AA isn't to learn how to control alcohol anymore. It's to accept that he's ill and he can't control alcohol like all the normal people out there. So he's too sick to drink. And the normals are not. They can still drink. So when you come to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, it's because you're ultimately the person learns to stop trying to control alcohol and to realize, I'm ill, I can't drink like a gentleman, and that's the main illness. I can't control alcohol. Guard your eyes. Most people come on because they can't stop using it, not because they can't control it. You know, and they're looking for somebody to help them control it because they don't want to stop using it. So, and just like in Alcoholics Anonymous and SA and every other 12-step fellowship, many people come in for the same reason as people come on to guard your eyes. There's nothing evil about it. It just doesn't work. The only thing that changes, though, is that on Guard Your Eyes, many people, Baruch Hashem, discover that they're not addicts and they can learn how to control it. Whereas in AA, NA, SA, etc., addicts, many people learn that they actually are addicts. They listen to the stories of others and they realize, oh my God, that's exactly me. And this guy lost everything. I lost only a couple of things. And I'm going to end up just like him because I'm doing everything like he does and I'm thinking the same way he does. Oh my God. And they realize that they're addicts and that they cannot control alcohol anymore, or, you know, promiscuity. I can't control lust anymore. Overeaters realize they can't control overeating anymore. They have to change the way that they eat so that their relationship to food is different, qualitatively different for, you know, forever, one day at a time, if they're, you know, going to stay sober in Overeaters Anonymous. So there's a major shift that happens in GYE or in AA, SA, NA, et cetera, where a person suddenly realizes that they're not an addict or that they are an addict. And when that shift happens, then they start to be honest with themselves and do the real thing, which is, if they're addicts, get some real help, which may be 12 steps. It may not be. It may be counseling, therapy, medication. There are options, you know, religion, some, you know, for a very small percentage, probably not you, but for a very small percentage, religion will work, you know, just, you know, religious stuff, but it'll have to include some of the basic ingredients of the alcoholics, that the alcoholics discovered usually, which is full disclosure to a safe public or to a safe person at the very, very least. Which Rebbe Melech mentions in the Tzetel Katan Os Yud Gimel himself, referring to religious stuff, not to addictions. So anyhow, you know, and at the same time, it shifts between trying to learn how to finally control alcohol, control my drug, you know, control pornography and like that, and lust and fantasy in the mind, control it, versus the shift comes to, that can't be part of my life. I'm too sick for that stuff to be part of my life. I have to have a different life. How am I going to learn how to live free of that stuff? Not to control it, but how to live free of it. And that's 12 steps. So what does this have to do with Torah Shabbat Peh? What does this have to do with the Akedah? I'll tell you. First, Torah Shebaal Peh. What do we know about Torah Shebaal Peh versus Torah Shebichtav? Well, we know a few things on different levels. On a halachic level, on a nigla halachic level, we know that Torah Shebaal Peh is usher to write down. Usher to write down Torah Shebaal Peh. The Gemara says, why did Rebbe write down the Torah Shebaal Peh and compose the Mishnah from the notes of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Akiva, etc., whatever? Why did he do that? Because, Eish La'asos Lashem Hefer Torah Secha, Gemara says, because the Torah was going to be forgotten. The Rambam talks about this in his Hakdamah to Mishnah Torah. The Torah was going to be forgotten. The Torah Shebaal Peh was going to be forgotten. And once it's forgotten, unless a miracle happens and somebody, you know, gets a gift from Hashem to know it, or somehow is a genius and inspired enough to be able to figure out things through drudges, like has happened a few times in history, maybe twice or three times, that's it. Small examples of that. Unless that happens, the Torah Sheba Peh would be forgotten forever until Mashiach comes and Hashem would give it to us for Ruach Nevuah. Like it says, Mala Ha'aretz Deya Es Hashem Kamayim LaYam Hasim. But before that happens, it's forgotten and lost, period. That's tragic. And Rebbe saw that that was imminent, and he said, holy smokes, Eis la'asos l'Hashem, heferi teresecha, heferi teresecha, Eis la'asos l'Hashem, the Gemara darshins. It says, it's time to do an avera, meaning write the Torah Sheba'al Peh down, because it's an Eis la'asos l'Hashem. So, aside from getting into the Hashgacha Pratis and other, you know, philosophical issues about how could that happen, how could God allow that to happen, etc., I just want to focus on what's the problem with writing down Torah Sheba'al Peh. Why is it such a concern that Hashem told us, don't write the Torah Sheba'al Peh down, don't do it? What's so bad about doing that? So I want to explain it this way, okay? There's, in sociology, there's a concept that I think Max Weber invented as a nice way to describe something. It's called, he's talked about societies and the different types, two basic different types of societies, and he called them Gesellschaft and a Gemeinschaft. I think he was German. Don't you think? And so he used these two terms, Gesellschaft and Gemeinschaft. So Gesellschaft, that's like general. It's open, it's big, and it's complex. And gemein is meine, you know, it's your, it's mine, you know, it's like personal. What's a big society and a general overall society and a personal society? He says a Gemeinschaft, I don't know how to pronounce it properly, is the small African village, for example, you know, or an Indian tribe, you know, where you have the elders passing on a message, teaching the younger, you know, the youth, how to behave and what the priorities are in living. Stories are told about the great people of the past. The children listen with rapt attention, sitting around the feet of the elders at lessons and sitting around, you know, with their great-great-grandparents there who are very old and passing on this essential priorities and values that they need to do in order to be like their father, you know, our mother. That's a Gemeinschaft. There's organization, there's peace, people know where they're supposed to go, and people learn things through experience, by doing them, by watching them being done, you know, and by seeing the people who live that way in the flesh. They see the elder, they see the tzaddik, they see the, you know, the grandparent, etc. And they watch how they behave, and they see the grandparent give everything up for this, you know, for being able to kill a bear when he was 12 years old to become a squaw. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's real life. This isn't just theory written in a book somewhere. So that's a Gemeinschaft. It's very powerful. Probably you don't have teens at risk, you know, very often in a Gemeinschaft. You know, you don't have kids off the derech, teens off the derech, you know. What's happening, you know? Why teens? You know what I mean? Why off the derech? Why is this happening in droves? Because we have a Gesellschaft. We don't have a Gemeinschaft anymore. There are schools where messages are taught to groups of children, not by elders, but by people 20 years older than them, you know, 30 years older than them, who they don't even know, teaching values not through example, but through information, passing of information, you know, books, reading things, you know, lectures, that kind of thing. In a city, in a Gesellschaft, it's too big and it's too impractical for there to be the mechanism working in a Gemeinschaft. It's, you can't have people passing along messages, you know, through here I am, see who I am and copy me, learn from me how I live my life. You can't do that on a personal level through experience because there are just too many people. So
You see what happened when Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 Talmidim, they all died. It's very hard to pass along, not the information, but the way to be. So no nahagu kavod zeh lazeh, and they all had to die. You know, it's very hard to pass along the really important stuff in a huge group. And who does Rabbi Akiva have his Talmidim? Five afterwards. You know what I mean? And he succeeded with five. So the Gesellschaft, the giant group where the information is passed along as like information, books, ideas, it can be very powerful. But it's not the same mechanism at all as a Gemeinschaft. This is Torah Shebal Peh. The writing down of the Torah Shebal Peh meant that you don't have to hear it mouth to ear from one teacher to the Talmidim anymore at all. Now, as you see with many big Tanoim who had many Talmidim, some of them succeeded. You know what I mean? Rabbi Akiva succeeded for a long time. Not like, you know, it was like for 6 months he had, you know, 12,000 and 24,000 and then they all died. For many years he succeeded, you know. But there was a problem there, a huge problem which caused them all to die. That's pretty significant. So what's the power of Torah Shebal Peh? The power of Torah Shebal Peh is the passing along of ideas from one person to the next, or from one person to a small group, by example. See me and hear me. This is why the Gemara says, Gedola Shimusha Yoser Milimuda.
Torah Shebichsah, I mean,
passing along Torah is through learning is very important, but it's even greater to be Mishamish Tamid Chachamim, meaning to attend physically, tending to Tamid Chachamim, eating breakfast with them, seeing how they deal with their wife and children, seeing how great Rebbetzins of the past dealt with their husbands and with their families. How many Gedolim do we have where you have the Talmidim who were B'nai Bias by them, who came over frequently and knew them and watched how they feared with their wives and children, and they say, that changed me more than all the Shir Klalis that the Rosh Hashiva gave. You know? It changed the kind of Jew that I am. You know? How many do we have? We have thousands. We have many, many people who say that. In fact, I would think every person who was Zocha to spend time by a Rosh Hashiva and be in their house and their family will tell you that the kind of Jew that I am today was influenced by the Shir Klalis that the Rosh Hashiva gave, yes, except only a tiny bit. The real ikar of it was how I saw him treat his wife, how I saw him treat his children. And not just that I saw the way he treated and I learned from it to do this, and I saw the way she treated them and I learned from it to do that, or not to do this, or not to do that, or how they argued, or how they didn't argue, or this. It's not specifics. It's an attitude. That's what these people were given. They were given, and they know it, and they admit that. It wasn't the information and a fact that I learned from this person. No. It was the general attitude, something that I cannot put in words. I can't put this in words. I learned this from action, from seeing. And the part of me that learned this thing was not the intellectual part of my brain, it was my heart. That's Gedola Shimusha Yoser Milimuda. And that's the beauty, the power of Torah Shebal Peh. That's the mouth that's passing along the information has that power because it's a person attached to that mouth. there's no person attached to a book when you read a book. So you have a Mishnah. And you can you imagine if you heard Rabbi Yehuda say a Mishnah, you know, how you would understand it differently? From the way that, just not just from the words that he used to explain, but he's right there. You know, you could ask him what he means. You could hear the way he describes it and expresses it. The way that he wrote it down has rules of conciseness, etc., and it ends up becoming the Gesellschaft method of passing information, and it's a tragedy. And that's why Rebbe didn't do it until it was absolutely necessary, and it's considered hafaras habris, breaking the bris of Torah to save the Torah. It's like an avera lishma. That's how they describe it. So, because why? Because of the power, the beauty of passing along Judaism as opposed to just information, and that's what was lost. To some degree, lost when the Torah Shebaal Peh was committed to writing. There's a beautiful Reb Tzadok. Reb Tzadok asks a question along these lines. Why in Pirkei Avos does it say, so-and-so says, you know, and then there's a pasuk in Mishlei, you know? there are two places that he mentions in Pirkei Avos where somebody said a saying, and it was just, the whole saying was a complete pasuk male for Mishlei. That's it. What value could there possibly be in him explaining that? You know, a yid should learn Sefer Mishlei. You know, the Gra had Mishlei, right? The Kuzari, you know, the Mishlei Zisharim on his desk, whatever it was, you know, different traditions. But you learn these Sfarim, this is what you learn. You know, why is he, and also, how did he get so famous? You know, I mean, I've said a pasuk in Mishlei, nobody announces that in public, you know. You know, you're not going to find announcements from, Reb Chaim Kanievsky Shlita. Reb Chaim Kanievsky said, whatever. You're not going to hear him quoting a pasuk and that's it. They're going to give a drusha and everything explaining it for shteitzah because it's ridiculous. How did these tanoim who made it into Pirkei Avos, so to speak, get famous for like, oh, so-and-so says this pasuk? So Tzadok answers with exactly the point I'm trying to make here. He brings a story of a sweet drasha on the story. That's a very typical Reb Tzadok thing. He says that he brings a story down that there was a rochel that was walking through the street. It's a Gemara. A rochel was walking through the street and announced, "Who wants life? Who wants life?" And people came, "Oh, I want life. I'm so interested." And he says, "Niha isha chavetz chaim, ov yamim liras tovim, tzor shanach amera, v'shfasecha midaber mirma, sur mera v'asei tov, bakei shalom." Okay, so he brings a pasuk. "Niha isha chavetz chaim, don't speak lashon hara." Okay? So, by the way, midaber, it's like how I say elokai nitzor. It's not mi daber because there's no yud there, right? A chirik without a yud is pronounced mi, very similar to a shva, but different, and more e-ish, but not quite like a mi with a chirik and a yud there, which is a long e. But anyway, so mi daber mirma, and don't speak lashon hara if you're a person who wants chayim, who wants life. And that's the end of the story. So the Reb Tzadok asks, what kind of a crazy thing is that? A rochel, first of all, why does he have to be a rochel? And what is he's just quoting a pasuk. How is that not like, is this a practical joke or something? So Reb Tzadok, who wants life? Who wants life? You know, it's like is the guy just trying to get customers? Is that what he's doing? What's the Musa Shmuz here? You know, what's the value here? And he says like this, beautiful thing, unbelievable. What does it mean a rochel? the Ritzvik says that the Rochel here is a man who is a Baal Rechilus. He told Lashara his whole life before about other people. And he walked around passing Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra about other people. He was a Baal Rechilus. And he did tshuva. He stopped. He was a Rochel who stopped. And he became religious. He came from. And he stopped passing along lies about other people and telling Magala, you know, true things that were embarrassing about other people. In other words, he stopped speaking Lashon Hara. And this man, since he was a Rochel before, a Baal Rechilus before, when he taught the Pasuk, Mi ha'ish hechafetz chayim, ohev yamim liros tov, who wants life, don't speak Lashon Hara, when people heard that, they heard a different message. They heard the message of the Pasuk in a much deeper, truer way than they could possibly have heard by opening the Sefer and reading it or by hearing it from a man who never sinned before. And Reb Tzadok goes so far as to say that only the one who sinned and failed in this thing and learned how to do it right is the one who can pass this along and has that capacity because it means something different to him. And Reb Tzadok has, he shares this idea in different ways in a few places, in at least two places, probably a lot more than I'm not aware of because I don't know most of, obviously, six of them of Tzadok, I mean, at all. But I saw it in two places, and I'm pretty sure that there are more. And he makes reference. You can look it up yourself if you get one of these maftechos for Tzadok. It's very nice drushes. Anyhow, this is the same idea that I'm trying to say, that when Rebbe taught the Torah Shebaal Peh, or when anyone who learned it from someone, who learned it from someone, who learned it from someone, who learned it from Aaron, who learned it from Moshe Rabbeinu, taught you the Torah Shebaal Peh, Be'al Peh, it was a Gemeinschaft process. So, and it was far more powerful, and you came out with a far better understanding than we ever will, ever, because it wasn't written down. The only way to get it was from this live person. So people took notes, but I mean, that's not how they taught. You know what I mean? They didn't pass notes around to teach it. That's the point. And you see that's the din. People did take notes. Tanoim did take notes, even though, you know, I was to write Torah Shebaal Peh, but they weren't teaching it that way. That's the point, that the teaching of the Torah Baal Peh can't be done by notes. You're allowed to write notes, but you're not allowed to teach it by notes because you'll change from the Gemeinschaft, from the experiential teaching. I have experience, and now I'm going to let you experience me instead of just hear my words by writing them down. So what's this experience? I want to just mention the value of experience and what that means. And a perfect example of that, to me, is the Akedah. Avraham Avinu was given the Nisayon of the Akedah, even though God knew that he could pass it. Correct? We know this is true. We know that God knew that Avraham would pass it, or if you believe through for philosophical reasons that Hashem somehow didn't like that knowledge of Hashem doesn't mean anything real because then there's no Bechira, if that's how you believe, then Hashem knew that he. And you don't want to say that Hashem knew that he would pass it. You can say that Hashem knew at least that he could pass it. Okay, that much you have to say no matter what you believe philosophically about Yediyah and Bechira and how that all works out. You must say that I believe that Hashem knew that Avraham had what it takes to pass it. So, however you, I'm sorry about the background noise. Really, there's nothing I can do about it. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go into my car. Whoever you are listening, I'm so sorry. Sir or ma'am, give me a second. Okay. So why did Hashem give him the Nisayon of the Akedah if he knew that he could pass the test? And this goes for all the others, where you have a Nisayon. Who knows if Hashem is giving you the Nisayon? You know, who knows if you're giving yourself the Nisayon? You know what I mean? It's hard to say. But guess what? If Hashem gives a nevuah to a person and says, do this thing, and it's considered a nisayon, Hashem told Yechezkel to do a lot of things, some of which were very strange, like lay on the floor naked in the middle of town, you know, for a year, marry a prostitute. I mean, he gave Yechezkel very strange commands, you know, and he kept them. These were not nisyonos for Yechezkel. They were instructions for Yechezkel, you know. And as strange as they may be, and as difficult and uncomfortable or bizarre as they may seem to Yechezkel, this wasn't a moment of nisayon for, you know, for some purpose. This was Yechezkel got a, you know, an instruction from God to do, and that was it. By Abraham, we call them 10 nisyonos, you know. We call them the famous Asara nisyonos that Hashem gave him. Nisayon means a trial, a test, a trial, you know. So why was he given these nisyonos? I understand that a lot of people darshan the word nisayon, this is a drasha, that it means laharim neis, like to pick up a flag, in other words, to raise the person. But that's a drasha, that's not the simple meaning of the word. The word nisayon means a trial, a test. Let's see what he's going to do. Lo sinasu es Hashem. Do not test God, the pasuk says. Lo sinasu elokechem, you know, whatever it is. Don't test Hashem. And certainly it doesn't mean over there, don't do something to uplift Hashem to a higher madrega. That's not what it means. So you see the word nisayon means to test someone. That's clear. So Hashem is saying to Abraham, do this and this. Doesn't he know? Well, of course he knows. And if you don't want to say that he knows, because of the Bechira reason, at least you know that you have to say that Hashem knows that he's got what it takes. So if he knows that Abraham's got what it takes, he looks inside a person, right? It says, Elokim yirala levav, Adam yirala inayim, you know, Hashem yirala levav. Hashem looks at the heart of a person, and he knows you inside and out. He knows what you can do, what you can't do, what your abilities are. You know, he knows what you got. So he knew that Abraham had what it takes at the age of 100 and whatever he was at the time of the Akedah. It's not clear what Abraham's age was, but he knew that Abraham had what it takes. So what I'm going to say is going to fit into this Reb Tzadok now, and it's going to fit into the concept of Torah Shebal Peh that I explained before. Bezus Hashem. Why would he ask him to do do this act of the Akedah, even though he knew that he could do it or that he would do it? Why? Because of the advantage of Torah Shebal Peh over Torah Shebichtav. Because of Reb Tzadok's concept that he's sharing about the power of the Rochel telling people about not to speak Lashon Hara, you know? Because why? Because when Avraham Avinu did the Akedah, he changed as a person. He changed. He became a different kind of human being. Okay? That's the point. Hashem did it for Avraham Avinu. And he was giving Avraham Avinu an opportunity, and Yitzchak, opportunities to grow by doing the Akedah. Yes, he had what it took. Yes, he knew he was going to do it. Yes, he knew he could do it. Whatever, however you want to understand, you'd be in Bechira working there. But guess what? When Avraham Avinu, when you do something physically, you experience something, you change as a result. I change as a result. Avraham Avinu changes as a result of doing the Akedah. That's what Hashem wanted to accomplish, to make happen, that change. And that can only be done one way, by actually doing. There's nothing you can do in your mind to actually grow. The only way you are going to grow is by taking different action. The way that Chuck C., one of the old alcoholics, passed away in the 80s, says it, I think it was maybe the late 70s or the early 80s, he used to say, you can't think yourself into right living. You can only live yourself into right thinking.
Okay? Sorry about the background noise here. He used to say that, and I think it's a very beautiful thing. I just want to repeat it. You can't think yourself into right living. You can only live yourself into right thinking. And that's what the Akeda is about, experiencing something by doing it, and the result is personal, true change, as opposed to thinking and reading a book and understanding it. That's the weakness of Torah Shebichsav, of not Torah Shebichsav, Chas V'Shalom, but of writing down Torah Shebal Peh. That's the weakness, because there's no experience there. There's only reading. There's no doing. There's no personal relationship there. That's the power of the Rochel saying Mihu Ishech Avitzayim. That's the power of the Tana saying over a pasuk. You know, when it says Rebbe Omer, Rebbe Haya Omer, you know, Rebbe Omer, like, you know, or you know, Shammai Omer, you know, Omer, but, you know, Hillel, you know, Hu Haya Omer, you know. Many people would say these things. I'm sure many people would say things like, be nice to each other, you know. don't confuse the Talmidim, you know what I mean? Et cetera, whatever. You know, pick your saying from Pirkei Avos. You know, Ezehu Gibor HaKovash Es Yitzro. You know, I'm sure a lot of people would say that. But why did he become famous for saying this? What Ben-Zoma said this, and why did he become famous? Because this is something that he would either say frequently, or this is something that he lived by and actually embodied. And that's how many people explain it, that these people were quoted saying these things because they embodied these things, and that's why, that's what made them say these things. That's why they recorded. And that's the Rochel story. That's the idea of Torah Shebaal Peh, saying Baal Peh. And that's the idea of Hashem, quote-unquote, testing someone through Nevuah, telling them, do this, and then they get, and then they do it. Even Hashem knows before he commands them that they have the ability to do it. I mean, I know he's going to do it, or I know he can do it, at least for sure. But no, that man, Avraham and Yitzchak, they changed as a result of doing the Akedah, even though they may have had all the ingredients and abilities to do it before for many, many years, perhaps even, but they changed by doing it. And Alcoholics Anonymous writes at the beginning of chapter 5, writes, these are the steps we took. You know, when Bill and company write out the 12 steps, it doesn't say these are the steps we talked about, these are the steps we studied. Big book study call, phone calls, big book study groups, big book study meetings, they have no value in terms of information. The value is in hearing the experience of another person. And if you hear the experience of another person in real life, it's 10 times stronger. Why? Because you're a human being. You're not a brain. You're not a book. You're not an eyeball reading. That's not what you are. You're a human being. And that's the beauty of one fellowship being able to teach, you know, so to speak, another fellowship. I can learn recovery, even though I'm a sexaholic, I can learn recovery from an alcoholic. Why? Because the disease is the same. It's a drug addiction of some kind. It's a powerlessness to control the drug and use it as a normal person because I'm ill. And therefore, the solution that he found in learning how to give up alcohol is the same thing I'm going to find by giving up trying to control lust, you know, and giving lust up, not sex, lust up. It's the freedom that I can only learn from another person. You can't learn it from these lectures either. You can be inspired to learn it from real people, from hearing this lecture probably, and you might make that decision and start actually learning from other addicts, if you're an addict, learning from other addicts how they live by experience, being a ben bias, idola shimushi yoser milimuda. The connection and the relationship is what's going to change things. Nothing else will. Information will not change you.
And that's the lesson of the Akedah. That's the idea of Tereshit. That's the power of Tereshit Baal Peh, why it's so powerful, and why there's an Azhara, an actual Isser, designed to keep it that way. And that's really speaks really in the end to the whole concept of actual recovery. What the weakness of guard your eyes, or any website, or any book for addicts, okay, is that there's experiences being spoken about, but there's no Shemesh Tamei Chachamim, there's no experience, there's no Gemeinschaft, there's no Torah Shabbat Peh here. There's no experience being shared in person. That's where the power is. And that's what a sick person needs to have. So if you're not an addict and you're on guard your eyes, you can go very, very far with new information. Very far. If you're an addict on guard your eyes, you're spitting in the wind, ultimately. Because guard your eyes can only help you find the relationships that you're going to need to have. And if you don't do that and you try to rely on the information, then you're like a guy who's a graduate of the West Virginia School of Home Surgery. You know what I'm saying? Taking care of a bunion, you know? You're going to end up getting gangrene and losing your leg, you know? God forbid. You know what I'm saying? You're not smart enough. You're not. That's the humility in the program. That's why humility is spoken about so much in Alcoholics Anonymous, in the 12-step program. Humility, humility, humility. What's the point? Well, it takes humility for me to say, I can't figure this out. I don't need Torah Shebichsav. I don't need GYE, a website that tells me information, and now I know what to do. No. I need experience. I need experience. It's what I do that will affect me, more than what I figure out. What I figure out won't help me. What I do will change me. You can't think yourself into right living. You can only live yourself into right thinking. How do you learn to live? By watching other people who are doing it successfully and imitating them, trying out what they do. That's the town elders in the old Gemeinschaft. That's what they do. That's the Torah Shebaal Peh, person to person. That's the power of the Torah Shebaal Peh that was lost in the old days when Rebbe had to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh, because the connection between people, as the Rambam explains very clearly, the reason that Rebbe wrote it is because Tukfu Hatzaras, and there was Pirut in Klal Yisrael. People were separated over distances. It wasn't possible to learn in person anymore. And the Torah Shebaal Peh was weakened and put into writing, which, by the way, Alpi Kabbalah has to do with the Golos HaShechina, which is the Shechina is connected to the concept of Torah Shebaal Peh very closely, of course. And that's the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Elohim, is referred to as Elohim, which is 86. That's Peh with the Kolel, and that's who is Malchus Peh. It's called Malchus Peh. That's what Malchus is, the Peh. And the Torah Shebaal Peh is connected to the Shechina, and the Golus of the Torah Shebaal Peh into the Golus, the Shechina being the Golusa, is its separation, Kaviyachol, you know, and that's what we cry about. That's what the great Tzadikim bemoan, you know, that. Sefer Shlomo talks about this, says that the feel of Tzadikim is always on the Tsar of the Shechina. When they feel Tsar, they say, oh, this is the Tsar of the Shechina. This is the Tsar. Oh, the Shechina has Tsar. It feels something like this. Very interesting perspective. But, again, hearing about this stuff in books is one thing. You know, meeting these people and learning from them in life is a total other story. You know, so we're accomplishing great things by changing. Great things. And passing along tremendous things to each other by sharing experience in person. My prayer is that number one,
I'm sober today, and that I'm open to the Rabbanu Shalom, experiencing the life that he's giving me, and accepting his will, which is everything that happens mainly, and in a minor fashion compared to the big picture, it's keeping his mitzvahs. Which I hope you understand, the main will of Hashem is expressed in things that happen and outcomes and your life circumstances. How you're supposed to behave, the Torah and mitzvah that you're supposed to do, that's how you express yourself. how God expresses and tells you what to do in terms of his mitzvahs, that is his will, but mostly he expresses himself to you by circumstances and events in your life and opportunities that you have and the things that you are exposed to. Hatzlacha Rabba with a good day. I hope that when we learn about the Akedah and learn about the Torah Shebaal Peh and understand these things, we make better choices. Hatzlacha, bye-bye.